Last time, on Tales of the Ironlands, Kalaira Sophie's daughter returned to the cavern of the Primordial and confronted it once again, this time with questions rather than combat. What, exactly, was the nature of her father's bargain with the Primordial? What could possibly be worth trading away his existence as a human? And the answer was, a child. Her father had traded his humanity for a charm to help his wife conceive. He traded his life for Kalaira's. A distraught Kalaira offered to take his place, but the Primordial refused, because she is death-touched. Nor would it accept any other form of payment, and her father urged her to let him pay his debt himself. And so Kalaira forswore her vow to rescue her father, and left him there in the cave to continue his slow transformation into a creature of stone and earth. Before leaving, Kalaira had the presence of mind to ask the Primordial if it could tell her anything about the Rose of Light and Shadow. It seems to know something, but required a price. In exchange for information, it instructed her to
put down the Baron.
When a bewildered Kalaira asked what that was, it only said,
"Ask your mother."
Retracing her steps homeward towards Palinham in a black depression only slightly eased by the presence of Inari, Kalaira once more encountered the mysterious carven stone that she had seen on her outward journey, the sole remaining stone, it seems, of the Cromlech of a lost elven village. Pressing her hand to it, Kalaira heard agonized voices whispering the word Tauti over and over. When Inari informed her that this meant disease in Elven, she was seized with a desire to learn what happened to the Elven settlement and swore a vow to discover this. They located the ruins of the village with no especial difficulty. There they encountered the lone spirit of a dead elf, who warned them against the Baron, but would say no more. When Kalaira asked Inari, he told her that a Baron rises from the spirit of an elf who has become death-touched and failed in their vow of service to the Black Lady. And that is where we're going to start. Kalaira raises her head where she sits at the back of the central chamber of this abandoned elven village, and she says, "An elf who's become death-touched and failed? That's what gives rise to a Baron?"
"Yes," says Inari. "That's a big part of the reason why we elves generally don't welcome death-touched among us." He turns back to look at her.
"Is that something that could happen to me if I fail in my quest?"
"I don't know," he says. "I'm no Kokari. I know that it can certainly happen to elves, but whether the same would hold true of a human, I cannot say." Kalaira does not find this comforting.
"Well, I suppose that means I just have to succeed," she says. "I just have to succeed. I don't think you've told me what it is you're supposed to do for her," Inari says. And so she tells him, there in the darkness of this ruined village, that the Black Lady wants her to go to the shattered wastes beyond the Veiled Mountains and pluck the Rose of Light and Shadow and bring it to her.
"Well, that sounds pretty hard," he says.
"I don't even know where to begin looking," she says. "I'm hoping the Primordial will be able to point me in the right direction. I mean, the Shattered Wastes. I don't really know much about them, but I gather they're pretty big.
Sounds about right. Well, look, it's getting dark soon. You want to camp out here for the night? We're perfectly safe up this high in the village. Shouldn't be disturbed by any nighttime visits from wandering wildlife, for example. Although there is that spirit, he says, and looks nervously around, that you were talking to. I don't think it meant us any harm, she said. It seems sad and lonely to me. Well, you're the death-touched one, so I'll take your word for it, he says. And I don't half fancy scrambling down a tree with no ladder in the middle of the night, or in the dusk even, he says, looking out, because it is indeed only dusk. All right, Clara says. Let's stay here, then. I presume that means we're having a cold dinner on account of we can't light any fires in here.
Well, he says, we could light a fire in here as long as we're careful to keep it well removed from the wood. And how do you propose we do that? She says. I don't carry any braziers or anything with me. They're much too heavy.
Good point. Cold dinner it is. And so they make a cold dinner out of trail food that Kalira had gotten from the Skaren. Bars of dried berries mixed with suet and grains that had been popped wheat grains, to make a sort of bar, dense, many calories in it. It's not great, but not awful either, and it will certainly keep them fed. Clara spends a little time looking at the potted plant at the side of the room that she had noticed before, the remnants of one of the vines of glowing flowers that she had seen in the Skaren village. This one is dead, long since. She examines it.
What are you looking for? Inari says.
Oh, well, these flowers are so great. I mean, I was thinking I should get some seeds for some of these, but I forgot to do it before we left the Skaren village. I was wondering if maybe this one had some seeds on it. And she's going to, I think, make a gather information check to determine if there are any seeds on this dead plant that she can gather. Here it comes. Gather information. Plus wits, I believe. And I'm going to give her a plus one on this because of her herbalist. She's well familiar with plants. So that's at plus three. That would be a 4 plus 3 is 7 versus a 1 and a 2. I think, yes, she is able to recover some seeds from the withered remains of this plant. Well, I hope they're still good, she says, packing them neatly away in her pouch. I'd love to have some growing in Palenham.
How large is your home? Asks Inari.
Oh, not terribly large. There are about 50 of us overall in 8 or 9 houses. Mostly we work as hunters. There are a few lumberjacks in the area, and we'll export wood occasionally downstream to other villages. I say downstream, but we have to haul it several miles over to the nearest river, which is navigable. There is a nice creek running through Palenham that we use for water, but it's much too shallow for a boat to make passage on.
Well, I suppose we'll be seeing it just as soon as we finish up here, he says.
Yes, I suppose so. And with no further idle chatter, they fall into a quiet, comfortable companionship, and then go to sleep for the night. Here's a make camp roll. Okay, rolling. Plus supply. 3 plus 2 is 5. Versus double sevens. Ooh, what's that going to mean? I think I'm going to ask the Oracle for some kind of complication here. Let me just pull it up. Rolling on theme. 86. Desolation. The night is fairly cool. It's still spring. It has been getting warmer, but somehow Kalaira takes no comfort in this. As she sleeps, she dreams. She dreams of a dark, open plain stretching as far as the eye can see. She's wading through hip-deep snow full of jagged shards of ice, lit only by the pale light of a waning quarter moon. The wind whips her hair about her head, and she keeps squinting, trying to peer through the darkness, which is only an eerie half-darkness with the whiteness of the snow reflecting the pale, watery beams of the moon. There is something ahead, something she knows she must get to, but she doesn't know which way it lies or how long it will take her to get there. She wakes partway through the night, perspiration beaded on her brow, and takes no comfort from this evening's rest. And I think she's going to suffer one spirit damage, dropping her from 2 to 1, and endure stress. Five plus 3 is 8 versus 1 and 9. Weak hit. She presses on. Inari snores. She's not particularly sure whether this is the side effect of having broken his nose or not, but she can't imagine that it's terribly comfortable to have all that vibration in the nasal cavities so soon after its breaking. In the morning, however, he seems just fine, and she says, "Here, shall I take a look at your nose again?" It's, "Oh no," he says. "I think I'm just going to leave well enough alone. Another few days, it'll be fine." "All right," she says. "Bad night," he says. "I just had some bad dreams. That's all." "Let me guess. You don't want to talk about it." "Ah, you begin to know me," she says. "Come on, let's get out of this tree and poke around, see what more we can learn here." "Suit yourself. You want breakfast first?" "No, I want to go down and start a fire someplace so that we can have some warm breakfast." "Good thought." It's considerably easier to get down out of the tree than it was to get up. For one thing, they already have a rope in place, and for another, gravity is on your side when you're going down. So, with only a minimal amount of effort, they make their way to the bottom of the tree. "I wonder what this place was called," Kalaira says.
"I don't know," he says. "I didn't even know we ever had any settlements over this far. But, on the other hand, we have been here an awfully long time, so I suppose it's not too surprising."
The two of them make their way over to the abandoned cooking area that they discovered the previous day. Kalyra grabs a fallen branch from a pine tree which still bears some of its needles and uses it as a makeshift broom to clear away some of the forest detritus, revealing a flagged stone floor, similar to the one she'd seen at the Skaran tribe. They use this as a spot to light a fire, since all of the stoves seem to have collapsed in upon themselves, and have breakfast. Afterwards, Kalyra stands and packs up all of her stuff and says, "Do you have any idea where we might find the burial grounds?"
Well, no, says Inari, looking around. There would have been a fern-lined path leading to them,
he says. Perhaps we can figure out where it is, but there's no prescribed location for such things.
Why do you want to go to the burial grounds?
I want to see if there are any, I don't know, obvious signs of what happened. I don't know. Let's go find it. Maybe we'll find something.
All right.
So, I'm going to make a gather information check to find out if they can locate the path to the burial grounds of the Lost Village. That's a total of 3. 1 plus 2 is 3, versus an 8 and a 6. The answer is no. They have no idea where the burial ground might be.
There are too many ferns around here. They've spread.
I know. There's no obvious paths anywhere. It's got to be around here someplace, right?
Well, I assume so. Unless the village was so new that it didn't have a burial ground.
Is there any way we could tell that?
No, he says.
Well, then it's just speculation. Inari, Kalyra says, I think maybe I need to try again to talk to the spirit that dwells here.
Well, if you think that would help, he says.
I think maybe it would be easier if I was alone.
Oh. Well, how about I just go hang out by the cooking area, and you can go back to the central tree and just, I don't know, try it there? That's where the last saw it, anyway.
Yes, thank you, she says. I'll be with you shortly.
All right.
And Inari sticks his hands in his pockets and wanders off towards the cooking area, whistling, which sounds quite strange through a mask.
Kalyra makes her way back to the central tree of the Lost Village. It's still there. They had to leave their rope behind because there was no easy way to untie it once they'd gone. She considers and hauls herself up the rope into the tree once again. The interior is dim as before. She sits down in the very center of the room with her face towards the opening and crosses her legs and rests her hands on her knees and sits in silence for a few minutes. And then she says, "Spirit, come, talk to me." And I'm going to try a compel with heart at plus one because of her death-touched asset. Okay, that would be a 9. 5 plus 4 is 9. Versus a 6 and a 7. Strong hit. So, she gains plus 1 momentum from the death-touched asset, and the compel check. Plus 1 momentum and may gather info at plus 1. Momentum is now at 9, which is actually where it caps because she is cursed. I had forgotten that last session and made it up to 10 there. It takes a few moments, but after a while, Kalyra gets the sense that she is not alone. She opens her death-touched eyes, glowing pale blue in the dimness of the central tree's hollow heart. And there in front of her, the white mask hovers once again, with the faint, wispy spectral form of an elf seated in front of her, mimicking her pose. "Greetings, spirit," she says. "Please, can you tell me about this village? What was it called? What happened here?" And here comes the gather information at plus one from the compel. I am tempted to add an additional plus one from Death Touched, and I think that makes sense because she is in fact dealing with the spirit of a dead thing. So this is actually at plus two, and her wits are at two, so at plus four. That's nice. And we have a 7. 3 plus 4 is 7, versus a 5 and a 2. Okay, so this would get her plus 2 momentum, except that she's already capped on momentum. So what she gets instead is just information. "This was the village of the Shatu tribe," the spirit says in a hollow, empty voice. "One of our Kokari, a woman named Pala, died of an accident and came back, having made a bargain with the Black Lady. But once she had returned, she found that she could not bring herself to honor her vow. When she passed on again, she rose as a baron. Did she kill the village?" asks Kalyra. The mask tips forward and back in a slow nod. "The baron that came of Pala spread disease among us. Pain in the joints, shortness of breath. And they made terrible noises, We called it the Singing Death because of the musical shrieks that our people made as they died, burning, burning from the inside, burning, burning. And the mask lights in flames, and Kalaira must turn her eyes away from the brightness that flares up from it, and when she looks back, the spirit is gone, burned away. And I'm going to mark progress on her vow to discover the fate of the elves near Palinham. No, don't go, Kalaira says. I have more questions. Spirit, return! And she's going to try a compel plus iron. She's going to try and intimidate it into coming back. Once again at plus one from Death Touched. But iron is also at two. And there's no plus one on this. Okay, so it's plus one from Death Touched for a total of plus three. Here it goes. Five plus three is eight versus a seven and a one. Spirit, return. There's more you have to tell me, she says. And there is a long, sullen silence before the wispy form once again takes shape, pulling itself out of the ether. What is it, mortal? And she gets to go gather information at plus one. So this is, once again, applying Death Touched and applying plus one on the gather info from the strong hit on the compel. So at plus four. Four plus two is six versus a four and a five. What became of Pala? What became of the Baron? Gone. Gone. When the last of our people died, there was nothing to keep her here. And so she left. Where did she go? I know not. Let me rest, mortal. Can you? Can you rest? Kalaira says. Or are you trapped here? And the spirit just hangs in the air. Know that I have already sworn a vow to find the Baron and put it down. When I have done this, I'll return here and tell you. The spirit exhales a breath of spectral vapor and vanishes once again. And I'm going to mark progress on this troublesome quest to discover the fate of the elves near Palinham for a total of nine progress. However, I'm not yet going to move to complete it. I think I will have to wait on that until I have dealt with the Baron and then come back, report in to the spirit, and make a final progress mark on that. Kalaira stands up once again and dusts herself off a little bit. Oh, that went well, she says. But now I have to find this baron, this Pala, wherever it may have gone, and deal with it. She climbs down from the tree and makes her way off to the cooking area, where she finds Ainari leaning casually against one of the collapsed stoves and whittling. He looks up as she arrives. Well, any luck?
Yes, she says. I conjured the spirit.
Inwardly, she thinks for a moment, how strange that is that I can call up the dead and speak with them.
Yes, I conjured the spirit and spoke with it.
Oh, what did it tell you?
This was the Shatu tribe, she says, and one of their own, a woman named Pala, Kokari, became death-touched, and then forswore her vow and became a baron. It said that the baron spread a disease among them that they called the singing death, because they made such musical shrieks as they died.
Well, that's pretty horrifying, he says. Ugh.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Are we done here? He says. Well, I'm probably going to have to revisit later, once I've found the Baron and dealt with it.
Well, then I think we're done here, because there's no way you're going to find that thing if you stick around here. Come on.
And so the two of them return to the journey back to Palenham.
Undertake a journey. 6 + 2 = 8 versus a 6 and a 2. That is a strong hit. So, I'm going to mark progress. The last two progress on the journey home. It seems that the village, the lost village of the Shatu tribe, is not so very far from Palenham. Just a half day's travel away, at most. It is getting on towards noon when Ainari and Kalaira make their way out of the edge of the forest. Ahead of them, they can see the palisade that rings the settlement of Palenham, located in a moderately large vale in the center of the woods here in the Havens. Smoke rises from the chimneys of the few houses within, and Kalaira can see in the distance a few people out working in the fields that stretch to the southeast of the village.
Home, she says. Palenham.
Interesting, he says. I'd heard of human settlements, but this is the first I've ever seen. Are they all walled like this?
Well, most of them, I think. I've only been to a couple myself. I didn't do much traveling until, well, just recently. Come on, she says. I need to go talk to my mother.
Is that so bad?
He says, oh no, I love my mother. She taught me everything I know about herbs and medicine. She's so kind, and I've really wanted a hug from her for quite a while now. But I have to tell her what happened to Father, and I have to ask her about the Baron.
The two of them make their way towards Palenham. The palisade has a great
big gate in it. There are no watchtowers, per se, and to one side there are a series of logs which look quite new. They have not yet dulled and faded in. That's where the primordial broke through when it came and took my father, says Kalira.
You couldn't use the front door?
It came at night, she says. Just busted through the wall like it wasn't there.
Hmm.
As she steps through the gate of Palinham, people see and recognize her.
Kalira, you're back, says a man striding out of one of the houses near the gate.
Hi, Frode, she says.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. But his face falls as he realizes that the man standing next to her is not her father.
Who's this? He says. What's with the mask?
Frode, this is Einari. He is an elf from the Deep Wilds.
An elf? The Deep Wilds? Good heavens! What have you been up to?
He says. It's a long story. I think I'd rather not tell it all over and over again. Can we talk about it this evening at a gathering? I need to go talk to my mother first.
Fair enough. We can have a gathering in the hall this evening if you'd like, he says.
Yes, I'd like that, she says. Making her way through the village with Einari looking curiously all around her, all around him, they soon come to a house on the west side of the palisade. It's a smaller house than most of the others, and Kalira walks up to the front door and opens it and steps inside. Within, there is a small room. Unlike many of the houses, this house has multiple rooms in it, three of them to be precise. Stepping through the front door brings you to a large common area with, you know, a hearth, a table, space for cooking, some cupboards off to one side. The floors are made of finely sanded pine planks, and the walls are made of a frame of timbers, black, dark wood, which has been sealed with pitch, and between them, whitewashed walls made of wattle and daub. The roof has been thatched with straw, and the stone fireplace at the back has a low fire going even now, keeping the place warm. There are two other rooms off to the side. One is a small bedroom with a single bed in it, which is very neat and tidy. Einari glances through the doors and notes that it is empty of personal effects, which seems interesting to him. The other room is further back. It looks somewhat larger than the smaller side room, but its door is closed and he can't see in. There is a woman standing with her back to the door, currently stirring something in a pot, which has been set to one side of the fire, well away from the center of the heat, but warm enough to keep a steady, low simmer. She turns around. She is a woman in her mid to late 40s, it looks like, with her hair tied back in a bun, graying from the black that it once was. Her face is somewhat lined with the beginnings of age, but most of those marks appear to be smile marks. This is a face which is accustomed to joy. Kalira, she says, and rushes over and sweeps Kalira into an enormous hug, which Kalira just falls into. Ma, she says. And Kalira's mother, Sophie Enya's daughter, steps back with her hands on Kalira's shoulders and says, "Well, what happened? How is it? Who's this?" "This is Ainari, Mom," says Kalira. "He is an elf from the Skaren tribe in the Deep Wilds." "The Deep Wilds?" exclaims Sophie. "It's a long story," she says. "Let's sit down." And so the three of them sit down. Sophie insists on getting both of them mugs of small ale beforehand. This is not a stiff, strong ale, just slightly alcoholic, a sort of nutty taste to it. Something to wet the throat with. And Kalira sips her drink before launching into the whole story in order. She recounts her journey north, the fight with the primordial. She skips over her fight with the boar. She has been careful to keep her eyes half-lidded and her gaze turned to delay that portion of the revelation. "And so then I met this woman, Alia'anor," she continues, and recounts her sojourn with Alia'anor, the trip into the Deep Wilds, meeting the Bantu and the Skaren, and the return trip, Alianor's death. "And then I finally talked to the Primordial and found out what Father's bargain was. He bargained for me, it seems," she says. "What do you mean?" Sophie says. "He told me, Father told me, with his own two lips, that the two of you were having trouble getting a child after you were married. And he met the Primordial and bargained with it for a charm to help with that." "Is that where that came from?" Sophie says. "Huh. Yes, one time he came home and he had made me a wreath out of flowers and woven with pine needles, and teasingly made me wear it that evening. Is that what that was?" "Yeah," says Kalira. "And I guess that's how you got me." She seems a little off-put to be discussing the circumstances of her own conception with her mother. "But the price that the Primordial demanded was that when I was grown, Father would come to him and be transformed into a Primordial himself. And I offered to take his place." "You what?" says Sophie. "Yeah, I did. I was so scared, but I did. I can't... And what happened?" "He turned me down," says Kalira, keeping her eyes half closed. "He turned me down because I'm not free." "What do you mean you're not free?" And Kalira slowly raises her head and opens her eyes to let the blue light shine through, and Sophie startles visibly. "It was a... Oh, Mom," she says. Kalira, what's going on? You need to tell me about this right now.
I got dumb, she says. I walked between a boar and her piglets, and it charged me, and we fought, and it killed me. I hadn't even made it to the Primordial's cave before it happened, the first time, I mean. And I saw the door and the Black Lady, and she offered me a deal. She would let me go back and finish what I needed to do, if I would do something for her. Oh, Kalira, says Sophie, and reaches out to her daughter and pulls her into an embrace. You didn't. I did, she says. And it wasn't worth it in the end, because Dad, after all of that, after all of the trials and the death and the fighting and the journeys and it was all for nothing. There was no other price. It wouldn't take me, because I'm death-touched, and it wouldn't take any other price. And so I had to leave him there. He told me himself that it was best that he pay his own debts. And so I left. It was all for nothing. And Kalira just weeps in her mother's arms. Ainari very quietly backs out of the room and sits on the stoop of the village. Sits on the stoop of the house. Oh, Kalira, says Sophie, rocking her back and forth. Oh, my darling daughter. You need to be careful when you make bargains. Yes, says Kalira. I've learned that the hard way. Dad learned that the hard way. Kalira raises her tear-stained face once again. And you learned the hard way too, didn't you? What do you mean? Sophie says. Tell me about the Baron, says Kalira. And Sophie freezes a moment, just face blank with shock. How do you know about that? The Primordial told me to ask you about it. Dad made a terrible bargain. I've made a terrible bargain. I thought, maybe it runs in the family. Am I right? Was it a bargain of some kind? And we're going to ask the Oracle, did Sophie Enya's daughter make some kind of bargain with the Baron, Pala? I'm going to give it just a straight 50-50 chance. High as yes. 85. Sophie turns sideways, leaving one arm around Kalira's shoulder. The two of them sit side by side on the bench at the table. Yes, I did. I did make a bargain with that foul creature, she says bitterly. Why would the Primordial tell you about that? How would it even know? I don't know how it knows things, Mom. It's a Primordial. They're Primordials. They do what they do. The Kokari Varus told me that
They know a great deal, that they're as intelligent as we are, and they've been around for basically the whole of the world's existence, almost. I don't know how it knows these things. But it wants me to put the Baron down. I need to know what you know about it. I need to know what bargain you struck with it. I can't go into this blind the way I did with Dad's. And I'm going to roll a compel check here, actually, with heart, to see if Kalyra can persuade her mother to tell her this. 6 plus 3 is 9 versus an 8 and a 2. So, strong hit. Momentum is capped. Gather information at +1. +3 is 5 versus a 5 and a 2. All right, so more momentum that I can't use because my momentum is capped. A complication. All right, I think I know what the complication is. I can't tell you that. I would love to tell you that you deserve to hear it, but part of the bargain is that I can't tell anyone about it. Anyone. Not even me, Mother. Not even me. Not even you. Not even you, my daughter, says Sophie. Why not? Says Kalyra. But Sophie just looks at her, stricken. What's preventing you? Says Kalyra. Can you talk about why you can't talk about it? Or give me some kind of hint? No. I can't talk about it at all. The terms of the bargain. Ah! And I think Sophie doubles over in pain all of a sudden. Mom? Mom? What is it? Oh, says Kalyra. You really can't talk about it. No, says Sophie, shaking her head and grimacing in pain. I really can't. I am incapable of talking about it. And she looks like she's struggling to get something out. Penalties. Ah! And she winces in pain. It's all right. Stop there. Stop. I'm just going to talk out loud, says Kalyra, and maybe speculate a little. You can't talk about it, because if you do, it will cause you pain. I've seen that. But maybe if you were to say more, it would kill you. Sophie just stares woodenly at the floor, neither confirming nor denying. I'll take that as a yes, Kalyra says. Oh, Mom. Is there anyone else who might be able to tell me about this? And I'm going to ask the Oracle, is there anyone else who could tell Kalyra about her mother's bargain with the Baron? I think it is likely. Needs a 26 or higher. 99. Yes, says Sophie. Oh, good. That's evidently not part of the conditions. Can you tell me who that person is. Yes, says Sophie. I could tell you, but it wouldn't do you any good. Why not? Says Kalaira. And Sophie shakes her head. Because he's been dead these 30 years.
Huh,
says Kalaira. Who was it?
Halfdan Groeson, says Sophie. My old teacher.
Well, as it happens, Kalaira says, I have recently been developing the ability to speak with dead spirits. Side effect of my bargain. So, he may have been dead for 30 years, but that may not necessarily be an impediment in my case. Sophie looks taken aback. Well, he died 30 years ago. Where is he buried? Asks Kalaira. And I'm going to ask the Oracle, is he in Palenham or someplace else? 50-50 chance. High is Palenham, low is someplace else. Got an 18. He is not buried in Palenham. He's buried in Aidenholt. That's down halfway to the coast, isn't it? Says Clara. Not quite so far, says Sophie. Only about a third of the way to the coast, actually. You must have been there, Kalaira says. Yes, that's where I was born, actually, Sophie says. It's where I was born. It's where I buried my parents when I was 14, and where I apprenticed myself to the herbalist Halfdan Groeson. He was a kind old man. Taught me so much about herbs and medicine. In a way, he's been your teacher. Everything I know, or almost everything I know about herbs and medicine, I learned from him and taught to you. Well then, says Kalaira, I guess I will have to make my way to Aidenholt and find him. Where in Aidenholt is he buried? Aidenholt uses a series of natural caverns in the hills nearby for burying their dead. As long as you're going that way, you could lay some flowers on your grandmother and grandfather's niche. Of course, says Kalaira. How will I find it? Oh, it won't be hard, Sophie says. The place is minded by a caretaker, a priestess. She was very young the last time I saw her, but that was quite a while ago now. She's probably still there, or if not her, then presumably her successor. Just find the priestess of the catacombs, and she can show you where all of the people are buried. All right, I'll do that. And Kalaira reaches down and unbuckles her sword belt. She frees the scabbard from the belt and takes the scabbard over to the fireplace. There are a pair of pegs set in the wall above it, and she reaches up and she rests the sword and scabbard upon them and just leaves it there. Aren't you going to need that? Says Sophie. And Calyrus shakes her head and says, I can't. That's the sword that I used to swear the vow to get father. I can't. But she raises her hand to the small iron necklace, the charm, the symbol of a spiral that her mother had given her, and she says, but I'll swear by this iron that you gave me. I shall find the priestess of the catacombs and see what I can learn from the spirit of your teacher. And I'm going to swear an iron vow. Ooh. 6 versus a 6 and a 9. That's a miss. So I don't think she's in the mood to forswear any more vows at the moment, so she's just going to lose 2 momentum, which is okay, because it was capped out anyhow. Won't you stay for a while? Sophie said, or are you intent on leaving immediately? Look at my daughter, all grown up, out in the world and forging her own way. But Calyra turns her face towards her mother and her eyes are glowing blue. Not really my way. Or it is. I chose it, she says, tapping her eye. I chose the path, but I don't know where it stretches. And yes, of course, it's been a terrible few weeks. I'm going to stay for a few days. I'll give an abbreviated version of the story to everyone this evening. Froda said he would arrange a gathering. All right, says Sophie. And we're going to sojourn. Because we really need to, like, her spirit is in terrible shape and her supply is not too hot. Let's just do some general maintenance here, shall we? We're going to start with the sojourn. A heart. And she does, in fact, share a bond with Palenham because, you know, it's her hometown. It's one of her background bonds. She has 6. 2 plus 4 is 6 versus a 4 and a 9. So a weak hit. She is going to gain +2 spirit. It is very comforting being able to talk to her mother and go over her woes and just slowly put them to bed in her mind. She is then going to make a heal check. Because she's a bit beat up from her journeys. That would be, with +1 from Herbalist, because she does have supply, +2 from Herbalist. Yeah, sweet. +6 is 10, versus a 10 and a 2. So that's a weak hit, which gets her... I'm going to give her -1 momentum for this, but she does get the +2 health, raising her to 5 health. And she's going to resupply. Um, Do I even need to roll for this, or would this be another sojourn move to resupply? Probably another sojourn move, honestly, because resupply seems to be more about wilderness survival. So, sojourn again. Plus heart, plus one is four, plus six is ten, versus an eight and a nine. Strong hit. So she gets to choose two more. She can add two supply, up to four. And two more spirit, up to five. Oh, it's actually plus, it's three if bound. And two if bound on a weak hit. So I should have gotten some more stuff. I'll just cap out her supply and call it good. So she's at five supply, five spirit, five health. Still cursed. And that's going to be super long term, so that's fine. Kalyra stays in Palinham for almost a week. The other villagers find her new eyes off-putting. I'm going to ask the Oracle. Does she have any problems in Palinham because she is death-touched? 50-50 chance. High is yes, low is no. 28. No. The other villagers are off-put by her strange eyes. But either they don't know much about what it signifies, or else they have sufficient faith in Kalyra that it doesn't bother them. Ainari spends the week getting familiar with the other villagers. Froda, Torgir, Brynja, Eldred, among others. Everyone is grieved to learn about Baron Verkinson's fate. The younger ones seem puzzled that he would strike such a bargain as Kalyra describes, but the older ones sort of nod knowingly. That seems like Baron Verkinson to them. Always wanting things. Powerfully. When the week is done, Kalyra packs up her gear and gets ready for her trip to Eidenholt. Are you sure you won't take the sword? Sophie asks, but Kalyra shakes her head. No, I can't. What if you need to defend yourself? Well, I'll just have to deal with that then. And Kalyra packs up her bow and her arrows and takes a spear. As she makes her way towards the road that leads out of Palinham and southeast into the Havens, she comes across Ainari, leaning against the Exing gates. Well, off again, are you? He says. Yeah, seems that way. Where to now? City called Eidenholt. Well, mind if I join you? He says. I'd be glad to have you, she says. And I think she's going to try and forge a bond with Ainari, because that seems like a logical thing to do, considering they've been traveling companions for a while. Is a 6 versus a 2 and a 9. So that's a weak hit. Friends, she says. holds out her hand. He looks at it briefly, says, "Well, friends, yes. But I don't know. This is very strange. He wants something to be her friend? What does he want? He looks at her outstretched hand and he says, "How serious are you about fulfilling your vow to the Black Lady?" She said, she says, "I have to. I don't want to find out if a human can become a baron." "I'll tell you what," he says. "Yeah, I'll come along with you. But I want you to understand, we are friends. But if there is anything I can do to stop you from becoming a baron, I will. Even if that's no good for you." She falters a little bit, but keeps the hand extended outwards, and he reaches out and clasps it. So I think what she has to do is swear an iron vow. So many vows of late. She raises her other hand to her necklace and she says, "Ainari, I swear I will prove to you that I am committed to honoring my vow to the Black Lady." Rolling plus heart. 4 plus 3 is 7 versus double threes. So that's a strong hit. Plus 2 momentum, taking us back up to 9. "Good," he says. "Good. Come on then." And he lets go of her hand, picks up a pack that was concealed around the corner, says, "Day's wasting. You were coming all along, weren't you?" "Oh, well, I suppose," he says. "You're such a rapscallion." And that the two of them set their foot to the road to Aidenholt. And that's where we're going to call this rather awkward session. Just didn't really quite gel in places. Oh well, it happens. Addendum, just a little bookkeeping. The vow to speak with the spirit of Halfdan Groason is dangerous. The vow to demonstrate commitment to Ainari. I'm actually going to make that formidable, I think. Elves do not like death-touched. And I'm going to mark progress on the quest Deal with the Baron, which is formidable, so just 1 progress out of 10, because she has some inkling of where... In fact, she knows where the Baron came from. That's 1 progress. And she knows that her mother had some kind of deal with the Baron. That's another progress. Yeah. 2 out of 10. Oof, long way to go. Okay, all done.